My life. Amazing. My life.
My life.
Amazing.
My life.
My life.
With
amazing.
My life.
Amazing strangers.
Well, hello to you, wherever you are in the world today, and welcome to My Life with Amazing Strangers. As the title of the podcast suggests, I meet with people from all walks of life. We may have only met once, maybe twice. Perhaps we've never met at all. Sometimes we've been introduced by people we know, and sometimes we've met on social media. However, we do have two things in common, and that's the care and the welfare of human beings. My name is Gary Robinson, once a full-time broadcaster for a living, now aged in my mid-50s, I'm exceptionally proud to be an outreach carer. So the three C's, connection, compassion and care, are high on my list of daily priorities. However, it is impossible to shelve the broadcaster in me, hence these podcasts, these, if you like, audio actualities, where people tell me, and more importantly you, their unique and very special stories. This is episode one. My guest, my amazing stranger, is Adam Murphy, proud dad of three sons, including Ryan, an autistic person. Together they appear on their daily Twitter feed called Autism Care and Share, attracting around 43,000 visitors, and that is rising every single day. In this edition, together, we'll find out more about the remarkable Ryan, how Adam, as a dad, has learnt so much about neurodiversity and, for that matter, neurotypicality, having to be the loudest parent in the playground, resilience as a young parent, and an important development in Adam's life, which was revealed on the day, actually, we recorded this very interview. So this is the first edition of My Life with an Amazing Stranger, Adam Murphy.
Ryan's 26, and 23 years ago, he was diagnosed autistic with learning disabilities. So not everyone that's autistic has learning disabilities, and not everyone that's got learning disabilities is autistic. Ryan was diagnosed at a very young age, having learning disabilities and being autistic also. So, and around the same time, my relationship broke down with his mum. And unfortunately, this is quite common when someone's disabled, the pressures, and it's very difficult. And me and Ryan found ourselves homeless. Ryan was 3 years old. I was a young dad, so it was 20 years ago. I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And we set out that night, just the two of us, no home, no money, no nothing. And in just 6 weeks, I got us home. Back then, you still had the daily papers where you could get the, where they had all the classified adverts in the back. And I would go and scour the papers every single day. I was looking for free items. I picked up three items. I sewed them on. I got lucky. A care home was closing down, and some of the furniture that they were giving away was antique. I contacted a local dealer, sewed all the furniture, and got us a deposit for a house in just 6 weeks. And the pressure was on me. I've got OCD myself, anxiety. And I was able to, and I am able sometimes to, OCD is difficult, OCD is crippling, OCD is all these intrusive thoughts that tell you you have to do these things, you have to perform these rituals or something bad will happen. But then there's also this, as I grew older, that I had this awareness that I could turn this OCD almost into something positive. So I can scan adverts, like those classified adverts, like you wouldn't believe. I can get to that shop every single day at the same time. And if I've missed something, I'll keep going over and over and over and over and over it. And my brain's good for that. And so in those early days, that's what my OCD and my anxiety was doing for me. And so me and Ryan, we got ourselves home in just 6 weeks. And he's this three-year-old. I'm this dad that hasn't got a clue. We've got an empty bungalow. It's this huge bungalow in the forest team. Absolutely massive. All on one level. All the doors interconnect to the room. Those early days were like Tom and Jerry, just running around. Ryan running around, rings around me. The very first night, He's slept in his bed. He's got a bed. No other furniture. I didn't have a bed. I had a sleeping bag. I slept on the floor beside him. In my sleeping bags, slept out in his hand. And this is important because that night I started a routine with him. I started the good night routine. So I'd sing him a song. I'd tell him a story. I'd kiss him goodnight. Now, he's 26 years old now. We do that routine now to this day. It helps him and it helps me.
One of the words, Adam, as you were speaking there, when you were talking about the early days with Ryan, was it wasn't, certainly in my mind, it wasn't pity, but the word was resilience. And you must have been, whether you knew it or not at the time, incredibly resilient to do what you did within 6 weeks. And of course, you're a father of three. So Ryan's the eldest. Is that right?
Ryan's the eldest. So I married a couple of years after that, and then went on to have two more children. So yeah, I'm married now, and we've got three children together. Ryan's got two younger brothers, 16 and 18.
And how do they fit in with the family dynamics? Because, you know, Ryan is a unique character, quite clearly. What's the relationship like with his brothers?
It's not going to be the same as your standard household. And I guess that's going to be the case of anyone who's got a member of the family that requires extra help or extra care or neurotypical. Like if you've got someone that requires Ryan needs round the clock care. He needs supervision at all times. He needs help with his food, shower, shaving. And they grew up with Ryan. They grew up knowing that of Ryan. So they don't look upon it any differently, because they've not known anything different. They've only when they were in their nappies, they would sit with Ryan and Ryan would be stimming, playing and talking to himself and doing video games, and they would just sit there. And in fact, they still do that now. They still help him with video games when he gets stuck and things like that. So it's a really difficult question, because I guess in essence what when you get asked these questions, what you're being asked is what it's like to be three boys that aren't autistic in a general house where you've got that conventional family. And we're not that. We only know us. We only know what works for us. We only know our family as a family of carers, as a family who's got an autistic. We don't know any different.
The feed itself, the Twitter account, is incredible. And I mentioned at the start of the interview that it is clearly full of love and stories and the day-to-day routine that Ryan clearly has. Food plays a very important part. He's obviously very artistic. I don't want to give too much away because I want more people to come to the site and see it, because it's absolutely magical. And he's also a big fan of his 80s music as well. What's it when you're out and about? Because I'm quite keen to cover this one, if you don't mind, Adam. But when you're out and about, you'll find, I imagine, people who get it and understand autism, ADHD, neurodiverse people, I'm sure. But there's also people that don't understand and might, you know, see something as, put it in the behavior bracket, or something along those lines. Have you come across that in your years over the 26 years that Ryan's been around and have you found that people are understanding in the main, or have you had to stop and explain from time to time?
You come across it every day, every time we go out, every time we sit in a cinema, every time we sit in a cafe, restaurant, on a bus, on a train, every time we go about doing the general things that everybody else does, we come across that. We come across the looks, the stares, the glares, the touch, the moans. And the only thing that's changed is probably my attitude. So 20 plus years ago, when we used to get that, I used to get angry. I used to get cross. Why, why are people staring? I love this young man. And there's people making these horrible comments. They would say things like smack him and things like that. And then there's this realization that I have personally that not everybody is around a disabled person, an autistic person, someone with learning disabilities. My boys have been brought up that way with their brother because that's their brother. Not everyone has. Not everyone would understand why he's making those words, those noises, those sounds. So you've got to sort of put yourself in someone else's shoes. And I think that's where pages like mine come into their own, because they become education taught. And I think when you talked about the lovely comments that I get amazing comments. The ones that I like the most are from people that aren't parents of autistic children, aren't autistic. They've never knowingly come across or been in touch with a autistic person. And they will come into my feed and then go into my comments and go, I've never come across or been in touch with an autistic person knowingly. We've got to say knowingly because, you know, how would you know? And I love hearing your stories. Thank you for educating me. I didn't know that that's what that is. They then ask questions like, what's the stim? What do you mean by this? And what do you mean by that? And I love that. I love that. And I guess the easiest way to explain it is I was in a supermarket and I'm walking along and this little girl, she's there with her mum. The little girl's about 3 or 4 years old. Ryan's got his hands up by his ears and he's making all these noises. And the little girl keeps asking her mum, what's wrong with that boy? And the mum tells her to be quiet. She's very rude and stern to the daughter. She says, shut up, stop staring. And at that point, I intervened and said, I don't mind you asking questions. Please ask. And so I then explained about autism. Now, in that moment, even though I'm talking to the daughter, I was well aware that it was the mum that I was needing to educate, because the daughter goes to a school, and most schools talk about autism. Most schools teach about autism, have autism awareness. But adults don't get that, and that's not their fault. You don't get people that go around colleges, universities, workplaces, canteens, cinemas, talking and explaining what it's like to be autistic. So we've missed all those people. So when you're in that moment, you become so, and that's why I do talks. That's why I do radio shows like this, because it's so important to explain what autism is. And we can't be too hard on people. If people are tutting and moaning, it's because they don't understand, you know, and they just need, you know, just need being spoken to and talked to, and, you know, in a way that's not judging.
And there's a few more things we need to, and I'm absolutely, you know, going to discuss with you, because a lot's happened. I mean, people might be viewing this 3 or 4 or 5 weeks from this recording, but as of today's date, you're going on holiday in a couple of days. You're off to sunny Spain, and again, going back to your Twitter feed, one of the things I loved was the fact that you'd taken Ryan not on a practice flight, but you'd gone to the local airport and you'd been on a plane getting him ready for the flight. Did I interpret that correctly?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Ryan's never been on an airplane, never experienced an airport. So then we're in a situation where you think to yourself, well, because everything's about routine and everything's about planning for routine and changes to a routine. That's what it is. And so now we're going to an airport, we're going on an airplane, and we don't know how Ryan's going to react. He's an autistic young man with learning disabilities. We don't know what's going to happen. So we now need to prepare. So I've got to think of ways of how to prepare Ryan. So I thought, well, I knew that there was special assistance at airports, but I wanted more than that. I knew that they helped you through crowds and queues. But like I said, I wanted more than that. I wanted Ryan to experience the sights and sounds. So one idea I had was to phone a small airport, and luckily they have a charity that works at the airport, and I'd certainly recommend other people do the same. Phone around the big ones, and if all the big ones, some big ones do have schemes where you can go with autistic people, people with hidden disabilities. Some big airports do, and if the big airports say, well, no, that's not what we do, phone the smaller ones, because some of the smaller ones are council owned, and that's what's happened in this case. And they let us go up, Ryan experience, check-in, security, on a smaller scale, and we prepared for the day, took lots of photos, talked about it, still talk about it now. So yeah, we did lots of preparation.
So creativity when planning, Adam, seems to be a very important part of that planning process.
Yeah. Because years ago, Ryan started at his day centre and they did recycling. So they contacted me and said, look, Ryan doesn't want to do the recycling, but you know, we really want to encourage Ryan to join in with the grief. If you've got any ideas. So I just came up with something very, very simple. So I changed his T-shirt to a green T-shirt with a recycling logo on. And I changed his trousers to like work style trousers, you know, with the cargo pockets and, you know. And so I changed what he would wear on that particular day. And then I didn't say anything. I just gentle hints like the recycling logo on the T-shirt and things like that. He started joining me in with recycling, and it's just little things like that, because people are thinking, oh well. Then he gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning. He sees the recycling logo. He puts it on. Has to be his choice, and then he goes and joins in. Also has to be his choice. And that's what happened, just something very, very simple. And another thing, Ryan has eczema on his arms, and he doesn't like the eczema cream. Won't have the eczema cream go near him at all. So one day, he's getting distressed, and the eczema cream falls on the floor, and I'm wiping it up with a towel. And mistakenly, without knowing it, I then finished drying him off, and I used that towel that had the eczema cream on to wipe his wrist. And then I came up on the idea, why don't I impregnate the towel with the cream before? So that's what I did, and that's what I still do. So I put the cream, I rubbed the cream into a towel, I put that to one side, and when he's finished off drying, I quickly dry his wrist over with that towel with the eczema cream on. Now he hasn't got eczema. And it's just little things like that, just, you know, and I love doing that. I love being creative. We shouldn't have to be pushed into a corner where we have to come up with these things. We should be getting the help and support. That's the bottom line. But we do get pushed into corners, and we do have to come out with creative thinking.
Talking of help and support, Adam, brings me really nicely onto the next question that's in my head. With the help and the support that you've received, Did you have to fight for it? Did you have to become quite stoic in your approach, or was it something that was relatively straightforward, or was it a mixture of both?
You have to be the loudest person in every room. You have to be the person people remember when they put the phone down. You have to be more than a name, more than a number. You have to be more than the paperwork in front of the person. You have to know more than the person that you're going up against in order to get anything. So when you phone someone and they said, no, you can't have this, you've got to know at that point what your rights are before you have that conversation. And that involves doing a lot of research. That involves knowing your stuff and do your work before you go into a conversation like that. And never take no for an answer. And if someone says no, and if they say no again, always get it in writing. Always ask them to put a nice letterhead. Always ask them to sign it. Always ask them to make, because then they become accountable. And that's the advice I always give parents, because we get told no a lot. And if you're not a loud mouth, and if you're not a big mouth, find one, because there'll be one in every playground. There'll be the person, and you know who they are. There'll be the person. And what we love doing more than most is helping each other. We love helping people. And we've got that knowledge and experience because we've been doing it 20 or 30 years. Someone that has just had their child diagnosed, whether it be 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, they haven't got the experience to fill out the blue badge forms, the PIP forms, because they haven't had to do it before. No one that issues those forms are going to help them with those forms. They're going to have to find ways to do it themselves. And the only way that you're going to do that is by tapping into groups of people that have been there and done that.
So I just want to go back a wee bit there. So when Ryan was 3, 4, when he was that age, and you were a young new father in the circumstances that you found yourself in, and he's in bed, what was going on when you were in bed, in the dark, you know, in those quiet moments when you had some time to yourself, what was going through your head as a young father in these circumstances?
As a young father, am I going to lose him? Is he going to get taken off me? How do I get this help? How do I get support? How do I get housing benefit? How do I get disability living allowance? How do I get all those things that he needs? How do I get transport? And you lie awake thinking about those things. And this was in the days you could research on your smartphones. We didn't have smartphones. Or I didn't even have a computer or anything. So this was, and so that's what was, you know, it was about failing him and not wanting to fail him. And it was about, no, because you've got mountains of paperwork that you've got to fill out, and no one helps you to do that.
So almost by experience and trial and error to a certain extent, you've learnt and grown. And do you think that that's a similar pattern to a lot of other parents and carers that find themselves in a similar situation? Is it experience that makes you stronger?
I think it is, and I think it's the system is set up to say no to us whatever we ask for. The system, very often the people that are there that's supposed to help you in those roles, very often they don't help you. And we become, and I guess the point of accounts like mine is to help those. I mean, I all I do on my Twitter is come up with hints, tips, say what's worked for us. It's not going to work for everybody. And even if it hasn't worked for somebody, they're sat there thinking, well, actually, I'm going through this at the moment and someone else has gone through it. And that can be enough for someone, you know?
I was just thinking there, because one of your quotes was, my son teaches me more about autism than any book or professional. And
I ever could,
absolutely. But I suppose Twitter is the new book, isn't it? Because I was thinking, gosh, I'm thinking to myself, you could write a book. But actually, that's what you're doing every single day, isn't it, when you're posting?
Yeah, I'd love to. I've written a book, but getting it published is quite difficult. But I mean, he does teach me more. And that's what, and I think the point of a quote like that is when you've got an autistic child, you've got all these people around you, whether they be family, friends, professionals, a person on the bus, the teachers in school, they will give you all this information on how to look after your autistic child. Now, most of them might not have had pets, might not have had children. They more than likely haven't got an autistic child. They are the people that will be all these voices telling you what you should and shouldn't do. And there's only one person you should be listening to, and that's your autistic child. Because if you're not on the autistic spectrum yourself, if you're not neurodiverse yourself, everything you need's right there. Everything you listen and you learn from them. If if they don't like bright lights and bright colours, don't introduce them into your home. Don't wear them on your top. Don't bring the Christmas tree in at Christmas with all the lights on it. Listen and learn. And write a diary. Write a diary. And the importance of the diary is not only will it help with EHCP, not only will it help with assessments, not only will it help with diagnosis, not only will it help pinpoint meltdowns, put everything and anything in there. And if there's an emergency, you've now got the beginnings of a manual to pass on to someone where they can read it and go, this is why he's doing that. And this is what, because the whole point of this is to make the child's life easier.
I could listen to you all day, Adam. I absolutely could listen to you all day. It's been an eventful day today, actually, for you as well. If you wouldn't mind sharing the news that you received today with us.
Yeah, so today I'm a 50-year-old guy, and a few months ago, after a three, four-year wait, I had my own autism assessment, and today I was diagnosed as autistic.
And when you got that call, was that something that confirmed for you? Did you know in the back of your mind? Did you always have a suspicion? Or was it, well, obviously, if you've been for the assessment, there must have been something in your mind anyway, I would imagine. But did it come as a shock or a surprise? Or how are you feeling about that right now?
I don't know. At the moment, I'm feeling like I'm happy that I know. I've always known. I've known since I was a small boy. Some people get that moment when their own child's diagnosed autistic. They then start thinking, "Oh, am I autistic as well?" Because I do that. I've done that since a child, and I've had those thoughts and feelings way before Ryan was born. I've had them since I was a small child, so it's something I've always known. I was brought up in the 70s and 80s, and we didn't, certainly not in my community, we didn't use the word autism or autistic. And so those weren't words I knew for a long, long time. So I knew I was different, but I didn't know it was autism or autistic.
Well, I've got to say, in this interview alone, in the past 30 minutes, for people who are living in a similar situation, or people who aren't, you've been absolutely educational and inspirational. I know you're about to head off on holiday, and somebody said on your feed, update us daily. And I thought, what a nice idea. And then I thought, oh no, give the guy a break. You know, he needs a bit of rest. So I don't know what you're planning to do, whether you're going to be doing some updates on the feed or not. Or I'm hoping that you'll get the opportunity to chill out a little bit on holiday.
Yeah, I don't know how to say this, but with Ryan, there is no chill out. There is no rest, Euros. And even if there was, I think as a carer, you go past that point. Burnout is sort of like several years ago for most of us, and certainly for me. We go past that, and we get to a stage where even when it's the best day, we can't rest. We can't turn our mind off. And that's the same on holidays, you know? And I get my joy from knowing that Ryan's happy, from seeing that he's happy. I think carers in general, they don't get to a point where they can switch off, do they? And I know it's a parenting thing anyway, but it's more so when you're a carer.
My life. Amazing. My life.
My life.
Amazing. My life.
That was My Life with an amazing stranger, Adam Murphy.
Amazing strangers.
In the next episode, I'll be joined by the author Chris Carse-Wilson, who's enjoying considerable success with his debut novel, Frey. Chris will share his story of living with mental health, how creativity, exercise, and the great outdoors helps him, and will hopefully help you and the people around you too. Until next time, please feel free to liberally share what you've heard and perhaps learnt today. I'm so grateful for your company, and thank you for listening.